Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 625.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, as always, of course, in our ninth and two-thirds year, and by people like you out there in podcast land, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own beloved Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, any introduction that lasts that long can only mean one thing. It's April. So here
it's
we are,
late April.
Yeah, we got the we got that USFL action on TV currently. USFL. All games played in Birmingham.
I'm much more likely to watch the draft this weekend than I am some live USFL
action. Oh man, I'm enjoying the USFL. I wouldn't watch the draft if you threatened to saw my arm off if I didn't. I have zero interest in that. But I tell you what, I am enjoying the USFL because they brought back all the old logos, the team names, everything. It's just like it's 1984 all over again, which is awesome because the 80s rocked and it's part of the 80s. And Birmingham is undefeated, 2-0, which is awesome. The Stallions are rocking and rolling. And they play all the games in Birmingham, so that means that there's like a one-third full house for the Birmingham games and like five people there for all the other games. I feel bad. I mean, it looks like it's the height of COVID. The USFL is interesting, John. This is not where I plan to go tonight, but since it came up, the USFL it's like two Back to the Future movies. It's back to the 1980s, and it's back to 2020 at the same time, because you've got like the 80s vibe with the teams and the logos and everything, and then you've got the 2020 COVID vibe where there's nobody in the stands, and so together you got the USFL, huh?
I think that TV networks are desperate for spring football. They want to show professional spring football because live sporting events are where it's at from their perspective. And but I'm skeptical this league's going to survive when you don't see them in the stand either. So.
Well, that's the thing. The Birmingham team is 2-0. That'll help because they get fans for the Birmingham games so far. The first game of the league was Birmingham. They had a big crowd. And then the game this weekend, they had a decent crowd. But, I mean, you can't expect the Houston Gamblers and the New Orleans Breakers playing in Birmingham on a Saturday night or whatever to get a big crowd. They're going to get five people, and that's what they got. What they're hoping, I assume, is that this demonstrates the quality of the product, and then next spring they play in their own cities. But this is, I mean, think of all the money this is saving, that they don't have to go, you know, they don't have to travel. They're all right there in Birmingham. So they, you know, it's like the NCAA tournament, you know. You're in your hotel or wherever you're staying, and then you go to the stadium and play your game, and you go back home. It's, I mean, this league is on the cheap, but it looks good, and the quality, I think, has been pretty darn good, too. The only problem I have with it is, I was expecting to see a number of former college players that I recognized. I don't recognize anybody. It's like these guys all played for one of those make-believe teams like Rutgers.
So I thought, especially if you're going to sell it in Birmingham, you'd have to have a bunch of former SEC players on the
Wouldn't rosters. You think? I know. I expected to recognize half the players as like, oh, that's, you know, that's that running back from LSU that didn't make it. Oh, there's, you know, there's one of our linebackers, you know, or something. I don't recognize anybody, even the quarterbacks. The quarterbacks are like Louisiana Monroe and like Alcorn or something. You know, they're good, but they're not from teams that ever got on TV or that I've ever heard, you know, the players called. So But this, but you know, together though. See, here's the thing too. The old USFL, and I honestly did not think we were going to talk about this, but here's, it's all my fault.
I was going to say, thanks for joining us tonight for the AU Wishbone, where we're breaking down the USFL.
I'm ready to do a USFL podcast. Let's just do the prototype right now. But no, the only other thing I was going to say is that the 80s USFL was of the same quality as NFL. They had like top $1 million players. Right? I mean, they had Steve Young, Herschel Walker, Jim Kelly. I mean, they went out and paid the big bucks.
They were bidding against the NFL for those players.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas this league is purely a developmental league, right? So, you know, adjust your expectations accordingly, but it's still fun. So, well, other than that, what's going on with you?
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah.
I hope you... No.
This has been your USFL report. Sound effect coming next week.
Oh, no. I'm doing well. It's spring. Beautiful weekend here, so... I'm enjoying some time away from, you know, football and basketball, and it's good. So,
well, me too. We do have a few things of great import and great interest to our listeners besides USFL updates to get into. And one thing that we kind of agreed would be a really burning topic to dig into. So there's a guy on Twitter that is hilarious. If you take him with a grain of salt, mainly because he trolls Alabama, and I honor anybody who successfully trolls Alabama on a regular basis, right? He's big game boomer. He's an Oklahoma fan, but he puts together these colorful illustrated lists every day.
He, with an attempt to troll lots of people to get engagement. That's the goal of each list, not to be accurate.
No. And the thing about it is, I enjoy like critiquing them, and then people are all like, "It's just a troll account, man. Don't engage with them." I'm like, "Why? It's fun. What? You know? I mean, I tweet out like my four favorite Avengers covers, and I don't expect people to be like, "Oh, it's a troll account. He's trolling the comics fans." No, I just want to have fun conversation. What's wrong with that? So I get a kick out of it. As long as you know what he's doing, is just having fun. I mean, people act like, "Oh my God, you can't talk to that man. He's, you know." Why? It's fun. I just don't understand how people get their panties all in a wad because somebody uses like Photoshop or something and makes a funny little list that makes fun of Alabama. I don't. I honor that. If he had a Patreon, I'd sign up. It's awesome.
Yeah. My view of a lot of this is if something on social media bothers you, mute it, block it, whatever. Delete it.
Yeah. You don't have to. You don't have to like scold me, not you, but folks don't have to scold me for enjoying. Yeah, how dare I enjoy something that's funny? But the one that was really interesting, though, was he rated like the top 25 best rivalry nicknames and the worst rivalry nicknames. And there's some pretty funny ones on there. I think that my favorite real rivalry nicknames, I like... the Friends of Coal Bowl between Marshall and West Virginia. And I like...
the battle for the iron skillet between SMU and TCU.
That's pretty good. I don't understand it, but it's funny.
I like the civil conflict between UCF and UConn. That's a made-up rivalry nickname. So.
Yeah, I must have missed that one. Oh, I know the one I really like. Farmageddon between Iowa State and Kansas State. That's pretty good. So... we, of course, made it on there with the Iron Bowl coming in at number 7 in terms of nicknames, which is a pretty good one, I think. I don't know how we rate below the Egg Bowl in terms of nicknames, although I'll definitely say the Holy War is a great name. What's the Arizona State one called that's so big?
Territorial Cup or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was stupid. I was thinking the Holy War was... the Holy War is BYU and Utah, which is a whole other thing. So I have a little list here, some that I made up, and I thought you might enjoy hearing some of those.
All right. Bring it on.
Wet my whistle for just a second. Okay, here's a few I came up with. Get the sound effect ready to ask for... All right, so they have Kansas and Kansas State is like the Sunflower Showdown or something. What is that? That sounds like hippies are playing in that game. No. I have Kansas and Kansas State, Bleeding Kansas, right? And if there's not voter fraud going on during that game, they're not doing it right. All right. Now, they call South Florida and Central Florida the war on I-4 or the I-4 war or something, right? But most years, those two teams are not both really good. And there's some years that they're both pretty bad. So in the years when they're both pretty bad, I say you call it the eyesore on I-4. Okay. That's up there with the Bay of Pigs when Green Bay and Tampa Bay used to play. That was my favorite one that they used to, you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Was it Pete Axthelm, I think? Mm-hmm. He called it the Bay of Pigs. He says if it's a smash windshield game, if you leave two tickets on the dashboard of your car, somebody will smash the windshield and leave four more. That's good. That's good stuff. I said that Northern Illinois versus Northern Iowa could be called the War of Northern Aggression. And I know that my Southern brethren will appreciate using the War of Northern Aggression there. Illinois and Mizzou are the arch rivalry, and that's because they used to play in St. Louis when they play each other, kind of halfway in between. I said the Gulag Archipelago, because they're never very good. Illinois is just terrible. Speaking of Illinois, Illinois versus Indiana is the old oaken toilet bowl. You got to be careful with splinters in the old oaken toilet bowl, by the way. You can ruin your whole day with splinters in the old oaken toilet bowl. And if you throw Kentucky in there, too, for a three-way, the war for which state Lincoln is actually from. Because I checked with my wife on this, and she being a Southern Illinoisian, she says that Illinois, Kentucky, and Indiana all argue over which state Lincoln is actually from. So now you know it's the war for which state he's actually from. If you think about Ole Miss with Colonel Rebel and Kentucky in general, the war for Colonel Sanders' deep fryer, the golden deep fryer. Yeah?
That's not bad.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just like you have like a fry daddy that's solid gold. And whoever wins.
Just a basket. Just a fry basket.
Just a fry basket. Yeah, solid gold fry basket. I like it. You shake it. I like it. Rutgers versus Princeton. The snore by the shore. Yeah, the Jersey Shore, you know. Although I don't know who Rutgers is because we had a vote. We had a vote, and Rutgers does not exist. But if they did and they played fellow New Jersey team Princeton, it would be the snore by the shore. Georgia Tech, you'll appreciate this, John. This is a calling back to back on the ESPN Saturday night days, or maybe Thursday night days. It may have been a Thursday night game. Georgia Tech versus Virginia Tech, the battle for Lee Corso's lightning-struck car. Somebody takes it home every year. It's a dead car. Do you remember the deal with that?
Yeah, they played during a storm. I think it was at Virginia Tech. And his car got struck by lightning or whatever, and it fried it. His rental car or whatever.
It was incredible. We were watching the game, and it was in delay for the storm. And all of a sudden, this big bolt of lightning comes down, and you saw it on TV, and you thought, man, I hope that didn't hit anybody. But it was like on TV, the bolt of lightning. Everybody saw it. And then late, like hours later, you find out Corso went out to his car and it was totally fried because that lightning bolt hit his car. It's like God Almighty said, which one of these is Corso's car? Boom!
I got to get him off this broadcast.
Yes. Singled him out. It's just of all people, there's like, 70,000 cars probably in that parking lot, you know? And out of all those, his is the one that got hit by the lightning bolt. That's absolutely incredible. And so you have a big, you have a Lee Corso's car. You take it home. And then finally, LSU versus Louisiana Tech, the something heinous is getting boiled with celery and onions bowl. Yeah.
Something heinous. I would eat anything at the tailgate.
I don't doubt it. It usually looks pretty scary, though, before it goes in the pot. You got to admit. If it was bigger, you could make a monster movie out of it. That's always my view. If an ingredient in your food, if you blew it up to the size of like King Kong, it would look like a monster that could fight Godzilla. I don't really want to eat it. And pretty much anything they're putting in the pot in Louisiana, if you blew it up to 100 feet tall, you could make a monster movie with it. So, all right. Well, there was my view. Any thoughts? Oh, wait, hold on.
Please clap.
There we go. All right. Any thoughts on the rivalry names?
I'm just thinking about like a 100-foot tall crawfish, how much meat I could get out of that. That's all I'm thinking about.
Oh, man. Would it be good? I've never eaten one, so I don't know. Are they tasty?
Yes. Huh. Yeah, I enjoy it. I mean, they're fine. It's not my favorite Cajun or Creole dish, but I you boil them with some corn and potatoes, dump on the table, I may eat it.
Well, I'm a specialist at jambalaya, but I don't put shrimp or anything in it. I just do the chicken and the andouille sausage. That's all I need right there. But it is good. Those spices, the celery and the peppers and the onions and the filet, whatever it is, that's the stuff that you sprinkle in there. And the it's so good, yeah. All right. Well, what else have we got going on? Actual Auburn sports.
Auburn sports. We're in transfer portal season.
Mm-hmm.
And while there is no definitive movement, there are transfer portal rumblings.
Oh boy.
And yes. And on the basketball side, we have a few names that have visited recently.
Now,
current visitor.
Do I understand that we only have one scholarship left?
No, I don't think that's
really.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Cambridge left.
Yeah.
And Kessler and Jabari Smith went pro.
Yeah.
And we gave one scholarship to a walk-on last year. We don't have to keep him on scholarship.
Hmm.
I
guess I just read somewhere that we were down to one left. Maybe that included the probation.
I mean, we signed two freshmen, and we have one transfer already, right? So I think we could go two more.
Okay.
But again, there may also be other Auburn players leaving.
Well, don't forget the probation thing.
I know, but we have choices about which year we implement that.
Right, right.
It's a time period thing. So if they feel like they want to take somebody this year and have one fewer scholarship in one of the next few seasons, they could do that. So the names that are out there right now, there's a guy on campus right now, Julian Phillips, who's the other five-star decommit from LSU.
Oh,
so
okay.
Thank Will Wade and his operational security on the phone for that one. And again, he's a small forward, kind of like a 6'8 guy, could play small forward, could play power forward, but probably primarily a small forward, I would guess. And again, a five-star top 20 player in the whole country. So a big-time recruit. So he's visiting, and then we've had two other guys visit recently that we're really looking at. One is a center from a smaller school who's a good shot blocker and a good rebounder, so maybe kind of a Kessler replacement type. And it's spelled like Johnny Broom, but I've heard it pronounced Janai Broom. And so he is maybe the more of a pure Kessler replacement than anybody else out there. A guy that played against us this past year and was good. Had one of the better block rates in college basketball other than Kessler.
Where did he play? So,
Western Kentucky, maybe.
Oh, I did remember hearing that we were looking at a guy that played against us in an earlier game this year out of conference, but I couldn't remember if it was Nebraska or Oklahoma or whoever it was that we played. That was okay.
No, it's a smaller school guy, and then. There's also a guy who played at Tennessee who played against us, who was a highly recruited, five-star guy, but sat on the bench for Tennessee last year, who's another big guy, another center power forward type named his name's like Hadley Hackfield. And he is similar to the Kessler story in that he, was a highly recruited guy but didn't play much for Tennessee. A few minutes a game, didn't make a big difference, wanted to go somewhere else to get developed and play a lot more. So he's kind of that in that same mold with a talented guy, a guy that we were interested in out of high school but then went somewhere else. So we'll see what happens here. I think, again, we have some players coming back. We've already got one signee, kind of the power forward center guy, Trahor. So and we have the two, regular signees. One's a point guard and one's kind of a shooting guard, small forward type. So we can't take too many more. And you worry about, worried about last year, about playing time, about guys having to take reduced roles, whatever. But these are all really good players. And we trust Bruce and his staff to make some good decisions there. So
absolutely. No. Okay. So that's good. So we'll Yeah. Reload, not rebuild, is what I always like to think of with the basketball team now.
That's right. And there's probably, I think there's 2 weeks or so left in the signing period for basketball, so I think we'll have some decisions at that point.
Yeah.
And then on the football side, I expect to hear some more over the next few weeks as everybody else in the country finishes spring practice and players start, you know, hearing where they are and making decisions. Auburn has reached out to a few other wide receivers that have now hit the portal from other schools.
Thank goodness.
You know, some I think we're definitely going to get at least one wide receiver out of the portal. So it's really a question of them evaluating and seeing who's out there. And again, we're not going to get an all-world kind of player, but if we could get a guy like the guy we got from Georgia last year that could be, that could come in and play and make, you know, make a few plays and be dependable, that would be big. So that's what to watch for, you know, on the football side, is there's a number of wide receivers in the transfer portal they've been talking to. So,
all right. Well, we definitely need that. So bring them on, baby. Bring them on, bring them on, bring them on.
That's right.
All right. So we'll keep an eye on the, I have the old, the transfer portal, but I accidentally replaced it with
jump gate activated.
We don't need that though. Wait, here. There it is. This has been your Auburn basketball and football transfer portal report. There you go. All right. You don't get that anywhere else, man. You don't get Doctor Who music with your transfer portal update anywhere else. I'm 90% sure that you don't get it anywhere else. 90%. So, we've been talking about the different position groups on the football team, and I think we have gotten to the O-line, possibly the most important yet underrated aspect of a football team.
And it's not exciting to talk about because there aren't a bunch of new guys.
Yeah.
Because we had so many upperclassmen coming back, we couldn't attract anybody in the transfer portal. And we're, you know, we thought we might lose some guys after last year. But instead, a bunch of guys took their, you know, their extra year of eligibility because of COVID. And we got a bunch of like fifth and sixth year seniors
crazy
on the offensive line. And so we're really looking at a huge turnover after this year.
Yeah,
this is we have to be ready for that.
Next year is the year people have been pointing to forever and saying we're going to have no offensive line because of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of the 13 you have listed with a class beside them. Of those 13, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Eight are seniors. That just leaves five guys. Five.
Yes. And I think a couple of those guys, and we have one signee down at the bottom, EJ Harris, who's a true freshman. But you're right. I think one or two of these seniors possibly could take the, is not a six-year senior, could take the year come back. But we're going to need a bunch of bodies at offensive line next year. We're going to need several freshman signees, and then some guys who could come in and contribute right away next year.
No doubt.
Transfers or JUCO guys or something. Well,
and the thing is, these guys, they're all seniors now, but they haven't shaken up the world in their first several years. So it's like we've got all these guys coming back, and they're, they're okay, I guess.
Hey, one of the things they always talk about is the value of offensive line, experience and consistency and that kind of stuff. And we're going to be the test case for that.
Yeah.
If that matters as much as everybody says it does, then this unit basically kind of been together for 3 years, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Should be able to be effective at doing what they want to do and work well together. So that's a big thing.
Unfortunately, they're all like 3 stars or less. So, you know, 2 stars. Yeah.
So let's walk through it quickly. Again, tackle, we have... You know, again, 3 seniors basically for 2 spots. Troxel is definitely going to start, and then probably Brendan Coffey. Killian Zaire is the other guy. Could be Zaire, could be Coffey at the one tackle spot, Troxel at the other one. We have Garner Langlow, who was recruited last year, who's probably a tackle, but he's a redshirt freshman. We don't know if he's good or not. At guard, we have our one returning starter after this year for sure is Keandre Jones. He's the highest recruited offensive line recruit we have on here, and he's our best offensive line. I don't think he allowed a sack last year, even though he's a guard, but even then he's pretty good in the run blocking too. So I think he's a solid piece to build around. Brandon Council, again, is a transfer who's been here a couple of years, who has some positional flexibility. He's probably the other guard. But we have some other guys to look at, too. Cameron Stutz is a redshirt senior who's had come on in the spring, and people are pretty good at him. Jeremiah Wright is a guy who was a defensive lineman and converted over that was turning some heads last year and then got hurt, and they think he could be pretty good. Alec Jackson's a senior, kind of a backup on this piece. And then Tate Johnson is a guy we recruited a couple years ago who's a sophomore. And Colby Smith is another redshirt freshman like Gardner Langlo we signed a year ago, who hasn't played yet. But as you said, it's a big building block for next year potentially because we're going to need him. And then at center, we have Nick Broms and Jaleel Irvin. I think Irvin has another year left. He could do the super senior thing if he wanted to come back. And supposedly he's come along and had a good spring practice. And then again, we signed E.J. Harris as our one signee on the offensive line. But you're right. There's a whole bunch of seniors in there and a whole bunch of guys that are going to turn over.
There's guys that have been there a long time. I remember when Austin Troxell and Nick Broms were playing for Pat Dye, and they said to him, "Coach, how long do you think we'll be here?" "Well, you'll be here for that Harsin fella." "Hassenpfeffer? What's Hassenpfeffer?"
Some of these guys have been here 6 years.
Yeah, so, seems like it.
Who do we think has been here the longest? Troxell?
Troxell and Broms, I think, came in the same year. And I feel like at least one of them got hurt immediately, had to take a medical red shirt their very first year. And then they had the COVID year probably. So, yeah, I think that those two have been here forever. Jaleel Irvin feels like he's been here for a long time. But I think Broms and Troxell were on the same team with Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah, no, Troxell played in 2018.
Yeah.
Okay, he was on the team in 2017.
Yeah.
But didn't play, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
All right.
He can talk all about the differences between those quarterbacks. Yeah, I mean, he's played for a bunch of them.
Yeah, but Broms redshirted in 17, so they were both on that team.
Yeah, didn't one of them hurt his knee playing basketball or something very early on, it seems like, and didn't even get to practice or whatever. It's like they got delayed.
Troxell's had a couple of injuries like that.
So. Yeah, yeah. So it's a very top-heavy bunch of offensive linemen, basically.
They are, but experience, older guys, I think that should be able to be more effective blocking as a unit, doing what they want to do. Again, same offensive line coach 2 years in a row, something we've had, we haven't had a lot of consistency in that area. The interesting thing to me is they actually got kind of worse at running the ball last year from the year before, right? So one of the things I like to look at is the line stats on Football Outsiders. They have the blocking stats and they break it down into different pieces. And one of them is on a rushing play, how much is the offensive line's responsibility and how much is the running back's responsibility? And then how good are you at those things, right?
Yeah.
So in 2020, the offensive line was 2.95 yards per carry, basically. So 3 yards a carry, and that was 18th in the country in 2020. That was pretty good, right?
Okay.
So we're talking about Tank's freshman year,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Almost 3 yards a carry. Last year, it was, down 2.7 yards a carry. And they were 59th in the country.
And that was counting those early games when we actually we knew what we were doing at running.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, we didn't.
That's exactly right. So they got much worse at power success rate, which is short yardage, can you get a yard when you need one, that kind of thing. So
right.
I think these are stats that make me think, maybe we did have some injuries in there. We shuffled some guys around. I think that's a big thing. We need guys to be healthy and consistent. But I feel like we have depth and experience depth. But I think if these five guys, the starters stay together and stay healthy, we ought to be able to open some holes for Tank and be effective because of the experience and the experience working together and the game experience they have. They have a lot of starts among this group.
I hope that they can pull together just because, I mean, it's just been so difficult for some reason the last several years to just get any offensive lineman, and I've never understood exactly what went wrong. I mean, and I guess part of it is that there was probably some negative recruiting going on where people were telling the recruits that if you played offensive lineman for Gus, it wasn't going to get you ready for the NFL, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the sense I had was that the system that Auburn used was not one that translated as well to the NFL, and so that was kind of hurting us a little bit.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it, but also think you know, everybody wants good offensive linemen, right? It's a tough position to recruit. You really have to work hard at it. And I think you have to spend scholarships on guys. And it's much, in my mind, like you only need so many receivers, right? Mm. And we need more receivers right now, but we could definitely have taken, you know, another offensive lineman over the last five or six recruiting classes instead of a defensive back or receiver or something sometimes. And I think we would make a difference. So.
Well, of the list that you have here, other than E.J. Harris, who's coming in as a freshman, there's a redshirt freshman, a sophomore, a redshirt freshman, and a junior. That's like three or four really bad recruiting classes. Yes. I mean, when you have eight seniors on here, but as you basically said, that's eight seniors basically across three classes, 6, 5, and 4 years. So they've kind of piled up. But when they go, we're going to be in deep trouble.
That's right. And we're going to be, you know, banging the drum for guys in the transfer portal next year and trying to sign three or four freshmen at the same time. So it's going to be a big turnover.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt about it. So,
it's not a fun position to talk about because it's the same group of guys coming back, but we just have to hope that they play better. Right?
We need the proverbial gelling to have happened.
Yes.
We always need the gelling to happen. So how do we feel about this position kind of overall? I mean, do you think that they're going to be good? Do you think they're going to be terrible? Do you think that that's going to be enough that they've worked together before? I mean, are they going to be able to open anything up for Tank? Are they going to be able to protect whoever the quarterback ends up being? I don't know what to think about this group.
I think they're actually going to be better than people think. And I'm not saying they're going to be great, not going to be blowing holes. And again, I think what we saw last year was they were good against the teams that, you know, the good teams and below kind of that we played. But when you played the top defensive lines, they had problems, right?
Yeah.
We had problems running the ball. They had problems opening holes.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we got to get better is when we're playing the A&Ms and Georgias and Alabamas, we got to be able to open some holes and give Tank a fighting chance instead of getting hit in the backfield every time. So I think that's the biggest thing that I want to see this year. I think this group can play better. I think, you know, I think that experience will matter. I think they're not going to be surprised by anything. I think they're physically mature at this point in their football careers. And I think they have the ability to play better than they have shown this far. And I think we had some guys banged up last year at times. And I think if they're healthy and we can keep the core group together, I think we're going to be better than people think. But I don't, you know, think it's a thing where we can go, they're the strength of the team and we just lean on them and they'll carry us, you know?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's so much depends on how they do come together and how they play. So,
yeah.
So who's up next week? What position on the field are we going to talk about next week?
I think we're going to shake it up and go special teams.
Mm.
Like we'll go kicker, punter, and returner all together.
Yeah, I like it.
So all you people have strong feelings about the punter depth chart.
Well, we were talking on Twitter a little bit earlier this week about how Auburn has always had, and this is something you and I have talked about a lot, is that we always seem to have a good kicker. And, you know, honestly, with all due respect, you know, the one that people usually point to was our weakest kicker in the last, in the 80s, 90s, zeros, and 10s into the 20s. In the last 40-something years, the weakest link was probably Chris Knapp in 86.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying anything Pat Dye didn't say at the time. And
wow.
But he did. When we went and played USC in the 86 bowl in Florida, whichever bowl, the Citrus Bowl, I don't know. That was the Rodney Peete USC team. The reporter down there asked him, what's the weak part of your team? And he said, place kicking. And I always felt bad for poor Chris Knapp because that was like his 1 year. Remember, before him, you had Win Lyle. No. You had Win Lyle after him.
Yes.
And we had Al Del Greco and then, oh, no. You know what? That was the horrible McGinty-Chris Knapp era. That was the 84, 85. Yeah, 84, 85, 86 were the years we struggled with kicking. And then we got Win Lyle in 87 and it all got corrected. And we haven't had a bad kicker since 87, honestly. So we were good before him and we were great after. But I mean, you know, I can't even think of all of them. But Win Lyle and then Jim Von Weil and then Scott Etheridge was in there and Matt Hawkins was in there.
Rob Baronis.
Who was the one that kicked the field goal in 97 to win the Iron Bowl? I can't even remember now. That kicker was good. And then of course after that comes like Damon Duvall. For several years, had a good run. And then John Vaughn, except for the LSU game that one time. Other than that, he was money. And then just kept it going from there. Then, you know, we've had like the three or four just spectacular kickers the last 10, 12 years. Cody Parkey and Legatron Jr. and
the bookstore.
Yeah, the bookstore, yeah. Won the national championship for us. God, Wes Byram.
And we signed the top kicker in the country in this current recruiting class, Alex McPherson.
I like it.
Older brother was the kicker at Florida's kicker in the NFL now. So he'll probably redshirt this year and then be the kicker next year.
How do we always get such good kickers?
I don't know, but it's working.
It is
like, whatever it is. People are like, all right.
It worked for Tuberville. It worked for Gus, and it's working for Harrison. So I'm not complaining.
Nope.
But yeah, so that's good. Used to be Vanderbilt had all the good kickers because they got a lot of practice. All right. Well, so we'll look at the special teams next time around. But meanwhile, remember all this spectacular entertainment that you're experiencing currently. We don't have ads to support it. We rely on you, the listener, to keep us going. And to do that, to become part of the team, part of the AU Wishbone family, go to www.auwishbone.com. That's www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big honking orange button and become a patron. And we thank our patrons every episode around this time here. And not only do we thank our patrons, you can put whatever you want in the name box on Patreon, and I have to read it. So I'm now going to thank all of our various patrons. And by the way, the numbers have shrunk down a little bit because it's the off season. So don't leave us hanging. Come on and join in. And remember, one thing that several people have joined up for is we're planning some way, somehow, when the basketball book is ready to go, we're going to make sure our patrons get first crack at it before it even goes public. And you'll get to see it and kind of look at it early and maybe review it and whatever else. So that's just one more in addition to the, John, I've totally forgot. We have Fantasy Formula One updates too this week. So we got several things here to talk about real quick, but let me go ahead and thank the patrons. And then we will all right. So here now are the folks who are keeping our show going. They include Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Patrick Hayes, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, Ben Bloodworth, Bruce Isn't Harson Around, Chris Hilton,
please clap.
Yeah. Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, David Hegler. Yeah, some folks have begun putting soundboard sound effects into their names on Patreon, and so that way I actually not only read it, I actually play the sound effect if I can do it fast enough. Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Old Mrs. Miracle, Medical Staff. I need to get a sound effect for that. Algo Rhythm and Blues, I like that. Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Reynolds Wolf.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
Oh, I love that. I haven't played that in a while. Rich Reimer, Rusty Owens, Sarah Browns, and...
Smoke weed every day.
Crap. I hate when that happens. I can't... John
is
would
that
say...
Is that their name?
That it's two things, and sometimes I can't always find...
What are you... Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
See, this would be John's argument that I have too many sound effects on here because I can't always find the one I'm looking for at the instant that I need it. Yeah, that's part of it. Steve Harlan. Oh, here we go. The name changing competition was a brilliant stroke to make this portion of the show great. Soundboard.
Please clap.
There we go. Old Jeb Bush gets more mileage on here than he ever got on the news, you know, or in the primaries that year. Hey, oh, hello. Bless his heart. Theodore Gary, War Eagle always. Amen to that. Warhammer 6. Oh, I like War. Yeah, I'm a big Warhammer guy. WDE Richie.
Just two little country kids outside misbehaving.
Bow, 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 bow. That's from the Fabulous Gemstones, by the way. It's a really good one. Also, we have to continue on and thank Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, a retired Kim E. in Galveston, AU Wishbone Bracket Challenge Champion Patrick Williams. Way to go, Patrick. You did great on that. Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Bowl Pick'em Champion Boris the Tiger. Okay.
Rubbing our faces in it again.
He does. Brandon Smith, he didn't make his way down the stairs tonight. He's upstairs watching television in his little, you know, you do know, right? He has a little cat bed that's Jordan-Hare Stadium, right?
I've heard that.
Yeah, he does. He's got his own little Jordan-Hare Stadium bed. Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, Colby Butler, Corey Smyre, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Dibama, Helping Van Still Upgrade His Insulation, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Wiggle 87. Okay, and then Mark always allows me to insert my favorite soundboard audio clip. And I think for last time it was Ron Swanson. So this time, where did it go? I think it'll be the one we used to do for Alabama.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but believe me, they would not dare take things further.
Good old Alabama fan one. AJ Herman. Insert soundbite. I mean, I don't have that one, AJ. I'm sorry. He said, insert soundbite. I'm a man. I'm 40. I don't actually have that one. I've got,
You got Dennis Green talking about they are who we thought they were. You got practice.
No.
You got practice?
No, I got.
Playoffs. Don't talk about. Playoffs. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
I got that. I've got...
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
And of course, there's always...
If one can't go to pieces at the death of every foreigner, we'd all be in a state of collapse whenever we opened a newspaper.
I love that one so much, the Dowager. Also known as McGonagall from Harry Potter, but I like her better as the Dowager. So I guess that at this point, he's looking at me and saying...
You have failed me for the last... time.
I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that one, honestly, over the last couple of years. You know what I'm going to do to make it up to everybody? You know what I'm going to do to make it up to everybody, John?
What are you going to do, Van?
It's Georgia State Hate Week 2021.
What if every single patron made that their name? You had to play that, like... 50 times in a row.
I'm gonna make that
would be spectacular.
I'm gonna update it because that one I like the sound effect.
Whoa! Make a new one. That one is perfect.
Yeah, I want to be able to insert a different team in there for future use, so we can keep using it. It can be evergreen. and have whatever team we want. I just have to make sure I save the working file so I can go in and edit it. But we'll see. Let's see. Alex Nguyen. We're still in the middle of the list. Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brian Albanese. You know, it's a good thing that this segment of the show is popular with the listeners, because otherwise they would be really aggravated with this segment going on forever, and I apologize. C. Braun with the AU. That's cool. Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Elizabeth Donald.
And we got to get better at celebrating.
Yeah. Great season AU gymnastics. Oh, there we go.
Please clap.
I want early access to the basketball book. See, yeah, that's one perk that you get that we're going to do. Is We Believed a good gift for an anniversary or Mother's Day? Well, if a guy is asking us this, then it would mean an anniversary gift for their wife or for their mother, right? I think it depends on the wife or mother. If they're an Auburn
Absolutely.
Fan, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, if they're an Auburn fan, because it's not just breaking down the games, it's also like our life stories as Auburn fans and our families and all that. And our friends, right? Other people are involved too. There's stuff in there from like Delvin and Jared and, you know, all sorts of people just talking about why they love Auburn and how they came to be a fan and everything. So, yeah, I think it absolutely qualifies that way. I wouldn't make it your only gift to your wife or mother on the anniversary of Mother's Day, but I think it's a good supplemental gift. Is that fair? Yes. John's giving me the thumbs up. Okay.
That's the right way to think of it.
Yeah. I'll buy this for a dollar. Well, we appreciate it. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schenker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains.
Someone knows. God knows.
AKA Auburn Dead for Life. Loving Auburn apparently means you have to
smoke weed every day.
I don't make up the rules, folks. I just click with buttons that they ask. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy Bright. Kathy, I'm issuing you a personal challenge this week to tell me a soundboard clip that you'd like me to play, because I know that you listen, and I know that you're knowing the sounds, and you're smart, and you'll come up with one that would be very funny, so I want to hear what Kathy has to say. Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, here we go again, Spanky having trouble with my bracket, who knows?
Someone knows. God knows.
That's getting popular. Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis, I like it, I respect that. Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family. This name is brought to you by Bubba's Discount Tire and Tax Services, Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, and Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. Man, I appreciate it. You guys all made that a very much more entertaining segment than it has any right to be, and that's all on you guys, so well done. Now, John, we have the updated Fantasy Formula 1 standings. I won't take too much time for this. I'm just going to quickly tell you how the AU Wishbone League currently shakes up. And this is new to me because I haven't looked at it since the races. Currently, Daniel with Scuderia Furia di Pavoni is in first place with 880. Eric is in second place with Scuderia Aquila di Guerra, which is War Eagle, 837. Alexandra Ringer, I've heard of her, is in third place with 819, hot on their tail. Eric's other team, Scuderia Pesigato, 756. And in fifth place, Team Terry with Alexandra Ringer is in fifth. My team has worked its way all the way up to seventh after having two very horrible weeks. But I got to tell you, man, congratulations to Alexandra on being in third and fifth place with her two teams. She and Eric are like dueling it out for basically second place, with Daniel in first just killing us. So
your team is
in ninth.
Very fast, has moved up to ninth.
Ninth place, yeah. You're ahead of Alan. Alan Porter, our James Bond expert, is
who knows
Megrin
more
Racing.
About Formula One than
all the rest of us put together.
In his pinky that I know in my whole body. Oh. So.
Alan's DNA is half James Bond and half Formula One. He knows this stuff backwards and forwards. He is in 10th place. And then Mira's team 2 is in 12th. There's Royce, Danny, Mira's Del Taco Racing is way down in 21st. Richard, man, Team Guthrie's Golden Fried Fingers is at 23rd. So I feel your pain, brother. I really do. Believe me. It looks like I need to use my, several people have already used their, Mega Driver thing, which is probably Alexandra's already used it, so I need to use mine to catch up with you guys. And the wild cards are all still out there too. All right, so that's the Formula One, and now I believe we have a guess the game. Are you ready for that?
Bring it on. Who can it
be now? Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jarrett Albrecht, the yard sale artist, with guess the game number 49. I apologize, everybody, for missing Guess the Game last episode. My excuse for that is, nothing really. I just completely forgot to do one during the week. I think what we're seeing here is if there's no Auburn sports to be talking about, no big sporting events to be talking about, I kind of forget that everything exists. So, my bad, everyone. Let's go with Guess the Game number 49. And I'm playing with the format just a little bit on this one. I'm about to play you a referee call from a game, and I'm not even going to play the call in its entirety in the initial track. In the hint track, you'll get a little more of the call, and from those clues, I suspect you will figure out the usual, who we played and what year it was. So without further ado, let's listen to our first track.
After review, the runner's foot touched out of bounds at the 39-yard line.
All right, guys, I'll see you in the hint file.
All right. I think it is the kick six game and the guy going out of bounds with 1 second left, and they reviewed it and said Yeldon. That's what happened. I think that's what that play
is. So it was T.J. Yeldon, right?
Yes. It's 2013 against Alabama.
And by the way, the best thing about that being T.J. Yeldon, he's the one that was supposed to come to Auburn at the very last second, switched his commitment to Alabama, like at the last second, and then said, no more recruiting, I'm done. Which was all Saban, right? That's just so sure. Saban. Wait till the very last second, take away your top pick, and have them like shut down everything immediately and go. And so it just kicked so much butt that we were able to kick so much butt in that game and get him back. But I agree with you. I think it was. That's exactly what came to my mind. So it's 39. That would make it a 46-yard field goal. No, 56. Yeah, 56-yard field goal. I was going to say 46, I'd have been sweating a lot more than I was. 56, I'm like, yeah, you know, eh. All right, let's go to the hint file and see.
Okay, here we are in the hint file. I'm going to play a little bit more from that referee call and see what you can come up with.
After review, the runner's foot touched out of bounds at the 39-yard line with 1 second on the clock.
All right, I'll see you guys in the answer file. I suspect you've got it by now.
Yeah, I think he was very smart to leave off the 1 second, though. That made it a little more challenging, you know.
It did. It was still a good one. I like the idea of the referee call. That's a tough.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, Jared. That's a really good idea. You or whoever came up with it. I'm assuming he came up with it. That was really good. All right, here comes.
All right, gentlemen. This might be academic at this point, but if you piece together that this is the Kick Six Iron Bowl Auburn versus Alabama in 2013, then you are correct. I thought I'd have a little fun with it by looking at it through a different lens. You'll have to let me know how that worked out. Out there in listeners land, if you've got an idea for Guess the Game to keep me from doing weird experimental things, you can hit me up at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. If you don't have social media, you can email me directly. It's Jared, J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. And I want to say thank you to Mr. John Ringer from last episode, who put the plug in for those send-ins for me. Did a great job, and I appreciate that, John. Especially remembering to tell people, hey, don't just send me ideas, but if you can send me links to those specific moments, you make my life a lot easier. So thanks for that, John, and please keep that in mind when you're sending me ideas. And with that, Van, John,
something else Jared's been doing, I got to put a quick plug in, is on Twitter, he goes out like almost every day and hits yard sales, which is his thing, right? Very early. and he posts like a picture of all the new stuff he's gotten. He sells tons of stuff on eBay that he finds in various places. And it's always fun because he posts a picture of him and says, like, which thing here would you most like to have? You know, what's the coolest thing or whatever? So he is definitely, for a number of reasons, but that's just one more thing he's doing that makes his Twitter account a very good follow on Twitter. So there you go. At Yard Artist.
It is, and I want to thank Jared again for doing this. I can't believe we've done that 49 times now. I genuinely cannot believe it.
I know.
I think it's a really fun segment, and it's creative. And again, I like the idea of the referee call. If there's a famous ref call that you remember from a game, you could send that to Jared. We could bring that in as an ongoing thing too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. Absolutely. All right. So I think at this point, the only thing left to do is to hit the old...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Secret agent on whose side?
All right. Have we got anything this week?
We have one question, but it's a good one, and I think we could talk about it from there.
All right.
This question is from WDE Richie, friend of the program, who says this. I know you're a big Marvel fan, and I have an idea. How about a what-if segment? Mm. I thought this would be a great idea for the off-season. Have everyone write in ideas, and y'all pick one and answer it each week. I also have the best idea for week one. So... the idea, can you explain the 30 seconds Marvel What If?
Because there's an animated version of it now, although I'm not a huge fan of the animated, but I love the old comics. It's kind of a Twilight Zone meets Marvel, where they'll take some pivotal moment from Marvel Comics stories in the past, and they'll say, what if things happened slightly different? And it usually takes a Twilight Zone direction where things get kind of weird and unusual and unexpected, like, you know, what if Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four? Or, you know, what if the Avengers had become pawns of Korvac? Or what if Conan the Barbarian came to modern times and fought Thor, you know? Or, you know, it's that kind of cool idea of a story usually. So tell again exactly what he's wanting to do as a what if.
So he wants to do Auburn football history what ifs.
Okay.
So what if this happened, or what if this was what if this player was on a different team at a different time?
All right.
Or what if things were different or worked out differently, right?
Okay.
And so his initial scenario, or what if this player who got injured didn't get injured, or what if this thing happened? So his first scenario is ask Auburn fan who's the best quarterback in Auburn history. The answer is Cam Newton.
Okay.
And he says, I think Nick Marshall always gets knocked down a few slots because everyone always wanted to see Jeremy Johnson. He says, my what if is, what if Nick Marshall had been Cam's backup? Would we still feel the same, especially in the championship game when Cam hurt his back? Can you imagine Michael Dyer running the option with Nick Marshall?
Okay, so that's interesting. I understand what he's saying. We're going to tackle the scenario, but first I have some comments on the surrounding stuff. I understand what he's saying in terms of Nick Marshall and Jeremy Johnson, only in the sense that we all thought Jeremy Johnson was going to be a Heisman Trophy winning passing quarterback. And so we perhaps devalued Nick Marshall a little bit in 13 and 14 because we thought we were soon going to have an even better quarterback. And in retrospect, we realized that Nick Marshall was the great quarterback and we should have appreciated him more. And I think we did appreciate him a good bit, but we should have appreciated him even more. You know, looking back, he's one of our great quarterbacks and what he accomplished in his 2 years was amazing. And so I get where he's coming from there to a certain degree. I also understand if he'd been back up to Cam, he could have played some. But we could take that even further and say, what if Nick Marshall had been the quarterback instead of Cam Newton? What if 2013 Nick Marshall had been the quarterback in 2010? Would we have gone 14-0? We have gone to the national championship game. I don't know if he had the passing that Cam did.
Yes.
But in some ways, and I got to qualify this, he wasn't the first down machine that Cam was. But in other ways, he was more explosive than Cam if he got loose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like Cam was getting run down and caught from behind a whole lot, but neither was Nick Marshall. And Marshall could, like, find a little hole and just take off down the left side, you know, running that little inside-outside option thing. And with that running back core that we had in 2010, with Nick Marshall doing that, you know, that but you know what? The interesting thing about 2010 was Cam was the inside run, and his running backs were mostly the outside run. And with Nick Marshall, it was the other way around, right? Yes. Trey Mason was the inside runner, and Nick was the outside runner.
Yes.
So that complicates it a little bit. I think Dyer would have played more because Dyer would have been the inside guy like Trey Mason.
Yes.
And Marshall would have been the outside guy. But I don't know that we would have gone 14-0.
I don't know if we would have either. Again, I think there were some very tough teams that year. I mean, the game at Alabama, the LSU game in 2010, oh,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you put Nick on a team with that a talented wide receiving core and a veteran offensive line, you know, a good tight end. I think he could have, you know, passed the ball well. And I think, you know, he could have, we had some explosive potential, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he played the speed option guy was with Cam, we had McCaleb.
McCaleb, right? Yes. McCaleb was the speed
option. And so McCaleb and Nick Marshall on the field at the same time would be pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we would have been as good. Because I think Cam Newton was a generational kind of player who made the difference in a lot of games by himself.
Yeah.
But I think the team would have been absolutely a top 10 team with Nick Marshall and a contender for the SEC title. So
if Marshall had been the backup for Cam in 2010, but he was like the 2013 Nick with experience and not just like a freshman or something, I think we would have beaten Oregon by more than 3 points. Because like he said, Cam was kind of less than effective in the second half of that game. He kind of managed his way through it.
They were not going to take Cam Newton out of that game. So, I get the idea, but I just think there's a 0% chance that Cam Newton comes out of the game unless he's on a stretcher or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's have a different scenario, though, okay? But, I mean, this is a different kinds of what ifs. Are there players who either got injured and would have made a huge difference or, you know, were made declared ineligible or other things. And I always think about the one that you and I talked about a lot is Petway.
Oh,
if he'd have stayed healthy that year and we could have had the Thunder and Lightning thing. So
2017 Thunder and Lightning and our quarterback
Stidham.
Yeah. Throw into those receivers. He had a pretty good receiving core on that team. You had, yeah. Oh, Kerryon Johnson wouldn't have had to do everything, wouldn't have had to have been the short yardage runner, wouldn't have gotten hurt going into the, you know, in the Iron Bowl and everything, going into the SEC Championship game. Yeah. Yeah. With Petway healthy on that team, Kerryon Johnson doesn't get hurt. We beat the snot out of Georgia in the SEC Championship game, and we play for the national championship.
That's right.
Period. Yeah. Well, here's one just from that same game we were just talking about. What if Chris Davis doesn't get hurt on the opening kickoff of the Oregon National Championship game? Because Oregon scored on us on some long passes. With Chris Davis in there playing defensive back, that may not happen. Now, we won anyway, but I don't think it would have been, again, down to the last play, to where the stupid Oregon fans this day still, they talk to us like we talk to Virginia about double dribbling. The only difference is they did double dribble, but Dyer wasn't down, so.
No,
that's a fact. I do like the whole idea of the what if. I think maybe put that on our agenda. We can revisit it again next week and see if anybody wants to send us in. If you guys have like a good suggestion for a what if scenario we can run through like that, then send them on in either at AU Wishbone on Twitter or auwishbone@gmail.com and tell us what your scenario is for a good what if. And, you know, some what ifs have like the dark ending too, so maybe you have a scenario where something unusual and weird happens, you know. Maybe John Vaughn breaks his leg right before that LSU game in Baton Rouge and we have a different kicker.
What if Gene Chizik won a couple more games and was retained?
Yeah, in 12. Yeah. Well, we almost won the LSU game that year. A good LSU team. We had him on the. We had him. We could have won that game. Yeah. Then there's no 2013 with Gus. He's off in Arkansas State still.
Or hired at some other major school.
Some other place. And then when Chizik does get fired after 14 or 15, who do we end up with then? Kirby Smart? I don't know.
Definitely in a different place.
Yeah. Interesting, huh? It all starts spiraling out, man. As we always say, that way lies Matt. That speculation like that quickly turns into the 12-man Canadian Football League offense. This way lies madness, as I always say.
That's right.
All right. So that was our question. That was our thing. Do we have any other stuff to talk about this week before we wrap up?
No. And then again, I think the baseball and softball teams both playing well. Last year, I think the baseball team only won 10 conference games, and I think they've won 10 series this year.
Wow.
So a big difference. They're near the top of the league, and there's three or four series to go, and they're really in contention. So it's exciting.
That is awesome. I guess I'm going to have to start paying attention to Auburn baseball, huh?
That's it. Softball, too, is playing well. So we have to hear from our softball skeptic at some point.
Yeah.
About what's happening there.
I'm sure he'll check in. And meanwhile, don't forget USFL rolling along. Don't forget your USFL. You love it. You love it. You can't live without it. All right. Well, I guess we're going to leave it there then. And another show in the books. And I feel like there was something else going on, but I guess we will talk about it next week. So I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours. Wargo, John.
Wargo, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.